get the way through.
Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences and related topics, including what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature special guests of both experiences and researchers in the realm of NDEs and related topics. And you're welcome to call in and make comments or ask questions during the show. We'd also like to bring your attention to the fact that Toward the Light offers a myriad of services and resources for people who've had near-death and similar experiences, including near-death studies and support, psychic, spiritual, grief, and motivational counseling, Reiki and remote healing, books, DVDs, CDs, and more. For more information, please do visit our website, towardthelight.org. This week, I'm very pleased to have with us a special guest, someone who is an NDEer, who's had a number of out-of-body experiences, as well as spiritually transformative experiences. And she's a channeler, a lifelong mystic, and someone who's written a beautiful, beautiful book called Messengers from the Archangel Gabriel. Let us welcome to Toward the Light, Gail Arbery. Hello, Gail.
Hi, Juliet.
It is so wonderful to have you with us this evening, and I'm really excited to hear about the tremendous experiences that you've had and also that which has led you to the writing of the book. Well, why don't we start by your sharing a little bit about your near-death experience, because I think that that was a major catalyst for spurring you on to the path as you know it now. Am I correct?
Well, maybe. Actually, I'll tell you some other experiences I've had even before the near-death experience when I was four. As long as I could remember, when I was a very, very little child, I had some dreams. One dream in particular, which was sort of a gruesome dream, I remembered I was in a very large cave or cavern with a number of other people. It's very strange, but I could see myself pictured on an upside down cross with hundreds of people against the cave wall. This was when I was 2-3 years old, and I remember flames at the bottom of the upside down cross that we were all on. And that time period when I was a child, remembering another dream I had, which was very profound, was, again, being in a very small cave at this point. And I was next to a little boy who was about 4 years old, and he was very sick. He was lying, like, on this sort of stone slab, and I was trying to take care of him, and this man that I perceived was Christ would come into the room, and the room would fill up with light, and he would be taking care of the boy, and he'd ask me to go into this other section of the cave and get some medicine or something to give him, a spoon, I believe. And I'd go in, and there was this very dark, shadowy figure that would scare me, and I'd run back. And then this Christ image, or this man Christ, would come up to me and he'd say, "Don't be afraid," and we'd walk into this other room together, and the shadowy image would fade back into the corner, and we'd get this wooden spoon and go take care of the little boy. And so I had a lot of extremely young. I was like probably 2-3 years old when I started remembering these dreams or having these dreams.
Were you a child in the dreams also? Do you know what I'm saying? Or did you experience yourself being more grown up? Or
no, I was a little child in the dreams.
You were a little child in the
dreams. And then also, this is sort of fun, Juliet. Until I was about 4 years old, I thought there was this red-haired young woman that lived with us. Because when I was like, I remember one time wanting to crawl out of my crib, and this red-haired, beautiful red-haired young woman would come up and go, "No, no, no, you call your mother, call your mother." And I remember I used to ride on this, I'd get a cardboard box and I'd ride down our carpeted stairs from the upstairs down, and this red-haired young woman would go, "No, no, no." And it wasn't until later that I realized this was probably Gabriel in divine feminine form watching over me, because she didn't really exist in the house. And then at 4 years old, my mother had divorced my father, and it was just my mother and I at that point. And I woke up one night, it was about probably 9 at night, I don't remember. I seem to remember looking at the clock, and I looked for my mother, and she wasn't anywhere in the house. She had stepped out to the store for a minute, thinking I was asleep, and I was petrified in the house. And I was sitting in the kitchen, and I sat in this one big chair we had, armchair in the kitchen, and I looked into the dining room, and there was a large picture window that looked outside to where our driveway was, and the driveway went up the hill to the street. And I was really scared, and all of a sudden, this beautiful angel appeared, and it almost looked like a centurion, and he was facing 4 ways at once, and there was this incredible light coming from him, and he was like clothed in these rainbow colors. And when he showed up, I just felt protected and totally at peace, and I sat there and watched him, because I didn't want to take my eyes off of him. And he was facing all 4 directions at once. And then I could see the car lights of my mother's car pulling into the driveway. And they actually went through the angel. And by the time she got to the bottom of the driveway, he had disappeared.
I remember reading about these events, too. And, of course, it's really hard to put things into a neat and tidy chronological sequence. I had forgotten which order things happened in, but I remember reading this and being quite taken by it, because it's so familiar to me, actually. So go ahead, continue, please.
And then, of course, the one that we had been talking about earlier, when I was 4, I had my tonsils out, and they put me on, I can't remember what they gave, ether or something, I don't know. And I remember lifting out of my body and looking, I was floating on the top of the ceiling looking down at my body, and I could see everyone hovering over this little body. And the next thing I knew, I was up in this beautiful blue sky with white clouds and these 2 gorgeous angels, one on each side, taking me up through the clouds. And their raiment was light, was rainbow-colored light. And once we were above this set of white clouds, I looked down, and there was, like I was saying before, beautiful green pasture with yellow flowers, and there was this stunning white horse running through it. And then over to the right was a village. It looks like probably a little village out of England, from what I remember. It seemed to be small and very quaint looking, and it had a golden arch. And there was a lot of happy noise coming from the village. They were partying over there, and I wanted to go there. And the angel said, "No, you got to go back into your body." And when I woke up crying, because I wanted to go back up there.
Oh, who can blame me there? I went through the same thing. I was utterly devastated and brokenhearted when I was told that I had to return to this illusory plane that we live on
now. But I think we come here for a reason, you know.
Absolutely.
You know,
have to honor it and do the best we can with it. And with all of this, you know, everything grew and evolved in time. So what happened with these angelic beings as time progressed?
Quite frankly, Juliet, my entire childhood, I was an only child, and my mother being divorced and having to try to make a living, my grandmother was there, but I sort of got to raise myself in a way. So I had a lot of freedom that probably most children didn't have. So I would spend a lot of time in the woods, walking in the woods with my dog, and I mean, I'd go for hours on end, and I would talk with God, because God always talked back to me, and I assumed that everyone did this, and it wasn't until I was around 8 or 9 that I started realizing, when I was telling my friends, oh, don't you do this, that I was an unusual person, and I remember talking with one friend, and I was telling her, I remember we were walking down this dirt road, and I was saying, I better not tell many people about this anymore, because people aren't like me. And I think the only reason people aren't like me, Juliet, is because by that time they've had so much influence from siblings and from their parents that's your imagination, and not to believe this, that they finally just turn this part of their consciousness off. And so they block their mind to listening to God talk and listening. I mean, when I go in the woods, I could see in my mind's eye elves and fairies, you know. I would play with the elves and fairies, and I'd be talking with God, so.
Well, it sounds like you're describing my own life story in such a huge way, and it would be interesting to compare notes with the different individuals who've had such experiences, you know, are all thinking, oh, this is normal, everybody does this, and then
right.
To have the shock of finding out that no, a lot of people were not that way at all. And it was very interesting to go through that also. But yeah, the real important key here is to let people know that none of this was ever a hallucination or imaginary, and that we're having to break out of that horrible brainwashing that would imply that we were just,
right.
You know, experiencing something illusory or make-believe or what have you, far from it. And this has enabled you to be very, very strong and insightful, obviously, and it does come with the price, the burden of having to do this work, risk being misunderstood, and still you've got to stick with it, because you know in your heart that this is real and you were sent here to do something special. Now, when you had your near-death experience, do you find that even though you were young, and actually I think children generally, child NDEers, and I am one also, really are very deeply impacted by that experience. Would you say that was the case with you, that actually catapulted you onto this path or helped you to feel the inner strength to do so?
You know, like I said, Juliet, it was one of the many experiences, but I had so many. I can't say I would say it's definitely one that, you know, confirmed to me the reality of these higher planes, you know, that I was moving in and out of. But, I mean, I had things manifest in front of me as a child, too. It wasn't like just when I had that operation did I actually see. Like I said, I had the angel manifest in front of me before the operation. I would see this wonderful woman that for probably the first 3 years of my life that I assumed was part of my household. And then one day, you know, I realized nobody else saw this lady, and then she sort of disappeared. And at some point that the conversation with just talking with God started, you know.
Now, did you talk to your mom about this angelic being?
No, you know, I didn't. Not a lot. I don't remember talking to my mother really at all about it. I don't know why either, you know. I mean, I remember at one point asking her, you know, what angels and devils were, because I wasn't going to church either. That's the other thing, Juliet. I didn't, because my mother had been divorced and I never was raised in a church setting. I actually asked to go to church when I was a little bit older with my aunt and my uncle. And I went to one church, and then I decided I wanted to try the church where I was baptized, and I tried that for a while, but it didn't impress me. I mean, next to what I was seeing and hearing in my own personal life, this stuff was a shadow to what I already understood, you know. So, I mean, I don't know how else to explain it other
right.
than I was already quite open, you know, mm-hmm. even before I had that near-death experience. I'll tell you another one that was really interesting, Juliet. This was when I was in my early 20s, and I was living by myself with my then baby son in Georgia, and I had to go to the store and get some bread, so I put my little son in the back seat, and I drove to the end of my driveway, and my driveway is in the middle of a very long hill, and I had to go up the hill and get gas and then go down to the bottom of the hill and buy some bread. And I got to the driveway and God said, do not go. And I'm like, because I would have a habit of arguing with God a lot. So I'm arguing with God. I just got to go up the hill and get gas. I get up to the hill, top of the hill, and I get the gas, and he says, go home. And I said, I just have to go to the bottom of the hill to get the bread, and I'll go home. He's going, go home. And right after I pass my driveway, I lose my brakes. I lose my emergency brake isn't working either. And I'm picking up speed. I'm going like 40 miles an hour down toward a very busy intersection. It's a two-lane road, double line. There's cars coming. There's cars behind me. And my car is picking up speed. And on top of that, they had blasted through this ledge, so there's like these cliffs on either side of me going like maybe 20 feet up on either side of rock. And so there's the store coming up real quick, and a red light, and a huge intersection, and all of a sudden God says, turn up this driveway, and I see in a flash going up a driveway, a dirt road, hitting a car, and then backing down. I didn't even see with my physical eyes the driveway. All of a sudden, I could feel the wheel turning, and I was headed right for an oak tree. And the next thing, I see this dirt road, so my car is at this time going very fast, 45, up a dirt road. And lo and behold, I get up there, and there's an old car, and I graze the bumper with my car, which keeps me from going over a 25-foot cliff. And then I back down, and I edge the car into the side of the road. And at that point, I'm like shaking and saying, all right, I'm going home.
Wow.
And a policeman comes by and he says, that was some fancy driving.
That's so tremendous.
So I've had, you know, those kind of experiences also.
I remember reading about that in your beautiful book here. That was just really tremendous to go through that. And it helps you to not second guess your connection, your communion, your intuition anymore.
Right.
It's a very, very good and important point to remember. And so now you've been doing this work. You started to have the communion. When did you discover Gabriel? How did Gabriel come about, or when?
Well, I do believe that red-haired woman was Gabriel, because as I got older, he appeared as this. He's sort of reddish brown haired man, and when I first started actually channeling Gabriel, I was around 21, and I wrote. He was giving me direction at that time for my life at that point, and I channeled for a couple of years, and then I decided to put that aside, and my life got involved in a different direction. And so then I was still doing my psychic work, but in a different way. And then I moved back, I guess when I moved up to Maine, I was living in Georgia, I moved up to Maine. I started to do some channeling again about probably 5 years into it. And then probably in the early 90s, God just came to me one day and he said, you're going to work with Gabriel now. And I'm like, I almost, because I thought, for one thing, this is such an egotistical thing to think that you're actually talking with an archangel. How, you know, I was balking at everything. I was saying, are you sure? You know, questioning God. Are you really sure you want me to do this? And, you know, just a lot of nonsense in my head. And so finally I agreed to do it. And Gabriel actually, I had some talk about out-of-body experiences. I had some experiences where Gabriel would actually, I would go out of body and I would meet him. And the exchanges we had were like ecstasy. It was just incredible. So much so that I would come back into my body and think, I just want to go there. I just want to get out there. It was so real. And so then he started basically channeling. I started working on this book. And as I started channeling this book, my daughter had to go through one of my twin daughters had to go through some very rough back surgery where she was on the table for 5 hours and they were putting rods in her back. Okay, that was somebody was beeping me. So we continued, I continued to channel and we were getting ready for the hospital and I got really scared. And Gabriel said, I'm going to show up at the hospital. I said, you've got to do something because I have to know she's going to be all right. You know, we got to the hospital the day of the surgery. We're standing at the elevator. I look down. All of a sudden, I could feel him. I look over, and there's this orderly standing two elevator doors down. He just came out, and he looks at me, and he smiles. And I was just, I couldn't believe it. I knew it was him. It looked just like him. And I turned, and I told my whole family, there he is. And I turned, and he was gone.
Oh, no.
So, you know, he was letting me know. And when I channeled my book, at one point, one night, I was lying in bed, and I'm wide awake, and I look, and there's this blue 12-spoked wagon wheel over my bed. And I looked at my husband. I said, honey, can you see this? And he said, I see blue. But he says, I can't see the wheel itself. And I didn't know what it was. I talked to some friends that were Native American. They said it could be a medicine wheel. And later on, as time went on, it became more and more clear what the wheel was about. It's about the circle of 12 plus 1, and which I talk about in my book. But and then one night, I was lying in bed again and wide awake, and I'm looking next to me, and I see these little gold lines of light just materializing, and they start to make triangles. And I'm thinking, this is cool, so I'm watching it. And the next thing, the triangles start coming together, and it makes Gabriel's face. And he's right there, right next to my face, and I'm staring at this golden face of lines, and I fall asleep like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
that has to be very comforting.
It's, you know, and the thing is, Juliet, it's available for everybody.
It is. It really is. You're so right about that. And I think a big part of it is just the willingness to be open and receptive.
Yeah.
And that's a lot bigger than people realize.
Well, we've been taught that that's imagination, and if you believe in that too much, you're crazy. So we've been taught to fear our higher senses, and to close that part of our mind, close those synapses down, so that you know people won't think you're crazy, basically.
And yet I think it's really important to realize that what people think isn't really important. And I'm thinking of a few people that I admire so much now because they've had the courage to defy ridicule and everything else, you know, and just continue to do their work that they know that they were sent here to do. And
yeah.
Because unfortunately the majority of the masses are still hypnotized, they're still sleepwalking, they're still unaware. So we can't really, sabotage ourselves and our work for the sake of appeasing the sleeping masses. And I think as a result of my near-death experiences that I was told I had to come back to do this specific work, and I was also reminded that this plane is an illusion, it's not real, and that I'm not to identify with it or to get involved. And so I think the more people have these experiences and then we're comparing notes, there's an aha moment, as it were, And I think in a huge way it's giving us permission to acknowledge the truth and not buy into the lie that the five sensory world is real, because that's what is not real.
Right, right.
And I'm really appreciating what I'm reading in your messages book here, because you're addressing the quickening taking place, and I've been seeing it all over the place. So why don't we start talking about this? Because I think that as you share some of these things, a lot of people are going to be nodding, yes, 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 and also feeling the similarity from their own experiences. So why don't you start sharing with us some of the things that you've been shown that are very important for us to know about at this point?
Okay, well, I'll start with something, the simplest part of it, which is we have two ways of, or two actual energy actions that we can, each human being has. You can either act out of love or react out of fear. And as we were talking about with psychic abilities, we have been taught to react out of fear. We've been programmed by our culture, by our parents, by our many churches and religions and doctrines and philosophies to react out of fear whenever we are act psychically. So the first thing is to always monitor your actions, everything that you do. Are you acting out of love or are you reacting out of fear? That's just the basic. The second real basic thing is to understand that whatever your action or reaction has a repercussion within the quantum field or the cosmic field of energy. So whatever you put out there, you're going to receive back, whether it's a positive or a negative energy, believing or negative believing. The other thing, Juliet, and the biggest thing is that Gabriel has actually stressed that I teach, is to always, the true teacher for each human being, the true guru, the true mystic is your heart, your inner being, your higher self. So when people are continually looking externally for teachers, that those teachers will only help them, if they are true teachers, will keep bringing each individual, each human being back to their higher self, to their heart, to being able to open their human mind back to their higher self, to the voice of God within each individual, because you have, each one of us is an angelic being, and each one of us, each human soul has a divine direction that it has come to this life to live out and to work through, as well as living multidimensionally. And so the first thing that we do is we go on that inward journey to listen to our higher self. As you were talking about, you know that you came here for a purpose and that you are here to fulfill a purpose. You see, each human being has that. And so first you get rid of the fear of listening to your higher self, listening to your heart. You have to, and that's a big thing. I mean, it takes people years to be able to actually believe that quiet, still voice within themselves, you know?
Exactly. And it takes a lot of courage as well.
Yes. What are we here for? If not to believe for this, you know?
Exactly. Very, very powerful message there, and I struggle with this a lot. You know, there's what I refer to as the what if syndrome. People are afraid to venture into something that isn't tangible in their way of thinking.
Yeah.
To take chances, and that's example. A very good example of this I've been seeing a lot this year. Maybe even the past couple of years, there's so much transitioning going on. People moving house, people going through big changes in their lives, and of course a lot of people transitioning to the other side as well. Just a lot of big changes. And people are afraid to let go of what is familiar to them because they don't know what is coming up, and they're afraid to let go before they've got the assurance of what is to come. And I remind them sometimes we just need to let go first and free up ourselves to receive and to move to the next plateau, as it were. Have you got anything to comment about that? Because I know that you're one who's lived in a lot of faith too, and just trusting in your connection and your communion with these beings. How do you feel about that? What is your take on that?
Well, I think that that's part of an act of believing. When you are believing for something to happen, you have to take that first step out on your own. You have to reach your hand out, you know what I mean, to receive something. If you're holding on to something else and you don't let go of that something else first, you can't reach your hand out, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
You know what, Juliet, in Tarot, the first card in the deck is the zero card, the Fool on the Hill.
Now, what were you calling the what, please?
The Fool card or the Joker card in Tarot.
Oh, the Tarot.
In the Tarot, right.
Never heard the word Tarot before,
yep,
sorry.
Yep.
The Tarot, yes.
The
yes.
Tarot. And you see the Fool. I love this card. This is the card
I
that I feel is... But the Fool is taking a step off the cliff, totally believing that God or divine consciousness or however you want, creator, is there supporting him, and he is just in total ecstasy holding his flower and walking out because he knows that everything is okay, you
exactly.
know. And that's the act of believing. And again, we are taught so many times that this is not truly available. And so then when people actually have their free will taken away in a crisis situation where there's nothing they can do, they can't control their circumstance, and then a miracle happens, you know, because they're, somehow they manage to at least believe for a miracle at that point, they're at least saying, okay, I can't do anything, God help, and then God can help, you
mm-hmm.
see? Then it happens, that miracle happens. But we can live in that type of life, you see? We don't have to be pushed to the point where we're afraid of ETs, we're afraid of extraterrestrial life, because then we've lost control because there's something that is bigger and more powerful than us. So we don't want to believe in ETs. We're afraid of different cultures. We're afraid of climates. We're afraid of each other. We believe that if we can just control our little world around us, well, guess what? That we don't control anything.
That's the truth. That
we're
the
part of this great consciousness. And if we move into the flow with this great consciousness, then we can work with this consciousness to control everything around us, you see, to control, to actually, as we used to say in the old days, be in the flow.
Yes. And I've been using that statement a lot lately too, verbatim, that we need to be in the flow.
Right.
In the flow of divine love. And, you know, there is a really nasty, sinister force that is trying to keep people locked in fear, because that keeps them in a place of servitude and being unaware of who we truly are, which is indeed, we are divine beings.
Absolutely.
We are very much divine beings. And to be taught that we're sinners and that we're insignificant little good-for-nothing so-and-sos, oh, blimey, that's such a load of rubbish. That is load of rubbish.
You know, Juliet, the forces, let's put it that way, that are perpetrating this lie that's been going on for centuries now, actually feeds off of the negative energy what the negative energy does. You know, whenever you're feeling fearful or insecure, that's an energy.
Yes.
And that energy is sapping that energy and feeding off of it.
Oh, you're so right about that, and thank you so much for mentioning it, because And how nice it is that a number of people are coming to these wise realizations independently of one another.
Right.
And we're all able to iterate this from not only research but experience as well. And you are so right. In the times that I have been really frightened, even terrorized, I would just keep reminding myself, go back into the love. Go back into the love. Go back into the love. Because love and fear indeed are completely different frequencies, and you can't mix them.
That's right.
You're either in one or you're in the other. So I think that the more of us who can be reminding one another how vitally important it is to be in the love. And also, I think a good point might be to make, you know, some people might think, oh, it's blasphemous to call ourselves gods or that we're divine or what have you. No, it is not. It is blasphemous to deny our divinity.
Absolutely, Juliet. Absolutely. I mean, if you think about it, what is there? I mean, there is God, there is Creator, and there is creation. And so everything, creation, God, it permeates everything. And that divine higher being in you is a direct connection. That is your connection to God, and that ultimately, that divine silent witness, as Chopra said, is God that's inside each one of us. It's the fear, it's the energy of fear, which has been fed to us by another consciousness. And I asked Gabriel one time, this is interesting, I asked Gabriel, I said, well, you know, why have we got negative energy? He said, if you didn't have negative energy, you couldn't have matter. He said, it takes positive and negative poles to make matter.
Yes.
And so he said, good and bad are relative terms, they're human terms, he said. He said, when you live eternally, for one thing, he says, once you realize you are eternal, whether you're in this human body or you're out in your higher self, in your higher existence, he says, fear becomes just a slowing down of vibration, and you're constantly actually moving back into fearlessness, into the light. He says, but in the meantime, as the vibration, there's you have this whole realm of energy. If you think of, how do I say this? If you think of this huge ocean of light that we might call a cosmic ocean, it's multidimensional, it's multivibrational, and so as it slows down, we might call the slowing down of nature, the of the vibration, getting more and more solid, and I hate to use the word fear because it's going to confuse people, but there is a negative pole that slows down, it balances the positive pole, and it actually makes matter. So I probably confused everyone right now, but the point I'm trying to make is really fear is nothing more than a shadow to light. That if we didn't have fear, we couldn't understand love. If we didn't have darkness, we couldn't understand light. It's actually the purpose of creation is to understand love or creator, you know?
And we have to do this by seeing what is not and what doesn't work in order to understand what does work.
Right. And then ultimately what we do is we, by seeing what doesn't work, we change things. It's in the human heart to always go toward the light. It's in the human mind, the more fear it has, the less it goes toward the light. But in the human heart desire, a baby's desire is to love and to be loved, you see? And so as the human becomes less and less fearful, it continues to spiral back into that light. And the reason, but it spirals into the light with the knowledge of what it has seen, because it knows what what love is. It knows what light is now that it has had something to compare it to, and it has actually experienced a separation from light. That's really what I wanted to probably get out, was creation in its many forms are just many vibrational separations from light, from pure light. Remember, we were talking about on one of our conversations we had that what it's like to be in the light, once you go into that full light where you're just totally at home.
Oh boy, indeed.
You know what I'm saying? So here we are, separated from that light, and now that we remember, we now know what that light is, we know what that love is, what that beautiful awareness is by all of this separation. Well, guess what? Your soul, our souls, each one of us, made the decision to come to these different levels of, shall we say, separation from the divine consciousness, and to then permeate these levels with that same level, with that divine consciousness. You see what I mean?
It makes a lot of sense. Yes, it does.
So it's like it's God working through you to permeate this level as well as all the other levels that we live on simultaneously.
And to raise the vibrational frequency of this plane.
Right.
So that we can create as is iterated heaven on earth. Because I think that it is a possibility when the vibrational frequencies have been raised.
Yes, and this is Creator working through you, changing creation. Because creation is a living, breathing being.
Oh boy, is it ever.
You see, and so each one of us is creation. Our body is creation. Our minds are creation. And the divine spark is Creator. So everything is creation and Creator, you see.
And that's a wonderful reminder to have because, you know, I think that when people can start to look at themselves from a different perspective, from the perspective of love and being always connected with Source, I like to call it the light source,
yep.
That, you know, that the fear will start to dissipate. And I tell you, I felt so powerful when I was on the other side and I was really experiencing great bliss. Such gratitude and humility, you know, I never felt a sense of, oh boy, am I great now. Nothing like that. I just felt this real genuine connection with Source, and that's what's carried me, and that's what gives me any kind of faith or hope that I have because of knowing about that connection.
Yes.
It is so, so important. And you know, one thing that I feel really concerned about, and be interesting to see what you've been told about this. You know, people are so afraid; they're feeling guilty, they're feeling like they're sinners, and all of that. And of course, I don't believe any of that kind of stuff. I don't believe the lies that have been perpetrated through religion. How, you know, what is your comment? What has Gabriel said to you about who we are, and what is coming up for the human species, as it were?
Well, I mean, we have other other life forms here.
Absolutely.
And these other life forms, some of them are benevolent, and some of them actually are parasitic in nature.
Exactly.
And so, as the parasitic ones that we have, that actually do exist with us here on this earth plane. There's 12 planes of earth. There's 12 different vibrational levels, and within each vibrational level, each vibrational level is broken down into 10 vibrational levels. So there are entities, we'll call them ETs, that do exist and have existed simultaneously with human life on earth since human life's conception.
Yes.
And so some of them, again, are benevolent, and some of them aren't. We've known them as devils and angels. We know them as Lyrians and reptilians. There's a lot of different names we could put on them.
Exactly, yes.
You know, the bottom line is they are a higher form of consciousness than we are at present. These reptilians have definitely these... they can only move to the highest level. Gabriel has told me they can move to, we're on the fourth dimension right now, they can go to 4-4.
Yes,
so once we go,
I was feeling that too, that they can't really move beyond the fourth dimension.
No, they can't get into the fifth dimension, which is where we're going to rapidly right now.
Yeah.
But they what they do is they do control large masses of people. They control religions and governments.
Oh, do they ever? They control this whole planet.
Yeah. I'm not saying all religious people are controlled by this. I'm just saying that that there is a lot of religions and doctrines that control people out of fear. Whenever you see anything controlling people out of fear, anything, no matter where it's coming from, that's not divine consciousness.
Exactly.
That's a fear-based consciousness, and so that is reptilian in nature.
Yes, thank you for saying that, because I've always, you know, really wanted to iterate this to people too, that anything that is coming from fear, anything that induces fear, run the other way.
Right.
It's
right.
Not real, it's not valid, it's not accurate. And just like you said, if it isn't coming from divine love, then it is not real.
Right. And it's the shadow. That's what we call the shadow.
Yes.
Why it's interesting that we call our government, we have a shadow government.
Oh, absolutely.
And you know, in the Bible, Juliet, it says, and I'm not a Bible person per se, but I've studied that among other things that I've studied. It says, greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. And in reference, it's talking about God in Christ in you, with that Christ consciousness or that Buddha consciousness, however you want to see it, your higher self, your angelic being. Greater is that angelic being in you than he that is in the world. And he that is in the world is this reptilian force that has come here eons ago, and has asked to be allowed to be here and see and utilize humanity for their own spiritual evolution, actually. But because of their very nature, they can only evolve to a certain point, and so they've tried to utilize humanity in a certain way to actually evolve also. But in their process, they're a hive consciousness, or hive consciousness is the easiest way I can say it, where the top leader always feeds off of the minions, and so they've incorporated humanity's, as much of humanity, they keep their group in line. They keep their hive consciousness in line out of fear.
Yes.
And so, you know, in that sense, they keep as many humans in line out of fear, and they actually psychically use that fear-based energy to exist, you know. So once you realize that the angelic being in you is much more powerful than these beings that are here and actually living underground in the earth as well as flying around in the air.
That's the truth, too.
You know, then you move beyond their realm of control, basically. You know, whether you're going to call them devils or reptilians, I don't care. You know, it's just that you're much greater than that. And that's why I'm always telling people, you got to connect with your own higher self, you know. And the greatest thing that I can do for people is to just show them to teach them how to listen to their own higher self. Because once you get to that awareness, As you know, Juliet, where you see yourself, where you've seen how great and how powerful and how in light your angelic being is, then your whole consciousness, your human consciousness, takes a step to the right, and it lines up with your angelic consciousness, which lines up with divine will, and you literally are living in a different level of reality at that point, even here on Earth. That's why Jesus Christ could walk on water. That's why the many miracles of the Buddha, the many miracles of very many avatars, was because they lined their entire being up. Their human mind, which is your body, lines up with your human mind, which lines up with your heart, which is your higher self, and that lines up with divine consciousness. And once you're there, nothing can touch you, Juliet.
Oh, yes. It's such a beautiful place to be, too, and I admit I've been in that place, well, again, during my NDEs, and even whilst being on this plane, I'm sorry to say, it's been more fleeting than I would like it to be, but once you know that experience, it's so powerful, and I always try to remember it and put myself right back there again, really being in the presence of that divine love, because you do feel totally empowered, like nothing can shake you or break you down in any way, shape, or form. You're totally undaunted in that state, and it's really wonderful. I can't believe how quickly this hour is getting by. We've only got a few more minutes. Do you have something special you would like to share that maybe might help our listeners to feel more empowered, to trust their own divine wisdom coming through?
Well, I guess it would go back to what we originally started talking about, which is believing, to act, do not react out of fear, but instead act out of love. And in order to tap into your higher self and your divine power, you have to reach out your hand. You have to open the doors and say, okay, I want your help, God. You know, I'm here and I believe you're going to help me. And then you open the door, you reach out your hand, and then see what happens. Because that's when you're actually lining yourself up with that higher state of consciousness and you're listening to it. And then it will. And then when that voice talks to you, listen to it. You know, don't ignore it if it says, go here and do this. Do it, you know. It's your higher self talking. You'll know if it's fear-based. If it's something that makes you afraid, you know it isn't of God.
Exactly.
But if it's something that fills you full of chills and joy, you know it's Creator. You know it's God. You know, and you move on that, and that is when you're moving with your higher self. That's when you're moving as an earth angel.
And that's a very powerful place to be. Now, I guess what we should do is, why don't you give our listeners any announcements, upcoming events, something special coming up for you. Also, give us your website and how people can order your book. And again, the book, it's a beautiful book, beautifully bound, everything. It's tremendous. It's called Messages from the Archangel Gabriel by Gail Arbery. Where can people obtain this book? Or this is something you're still working on, I guess, too.
Well, yeah, Messages is complete. There's actually two books that are complete. It's Messages from the Archangel Gabriel and Memories of Mu. And you can actually go to our TEA Printers@AOL.com, and you can order those books right there. And we're sending.
Okay, that's an email address. That's not a website.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought .com was the website.
People can contact you.
Did I say it's tprinters.com, isn't it? tprinters.com is our. You can go to tprinters.com.
Okay.
And then there is a web. You can also email us at tprinters. But, yes, tprinters.com, and we're going to have a PayPal set up there so you can actually order the books right through there, through PayPal.
So that's wonderful. And also, I'll have your page going up very shortly on towardthelight.org. So if anybody forget, they can always go to towardthelight.org/Gail Arbery. As of this evening, that will be up. And this is really, really wonderful. And I've got your book up on the site as well. Very, very nice. And do you have any classes or special workshops coming up?
You know, Juliet, I don't do that. I work on an individual basis with people.
Okay.
I just figure God is going to put the people in front of me that he wants me to see. And so that's the way I've always worked. I don't charge money for things. I just walk my life and I say, okay, whatever walks in front of me, whoever walks in front of me and actually comes to me, this is the person I'm supposed to be working with. And I have a circle of people, of 12 people, that we meditate and we follow the instruction that actually I write about in my book. I sit in the center of these 12 people, so there's 13 of us all together. And we work, we try to connect with, we connect with the angelic realm. We all move up together through the chakras, and we work with Gaia. And we work with the angelic realm to continue this evolution of the planet, and of course the fifth planet, the fifth Earth, which is pretty much well and up and running and waiting for us to move into the fifth now in 2012.
Oh, boy, this is really an exciting time that we are all in right now, and I think it's so wonderful that you shared with us. And I know that people will appreciate seeing your book and all of the positive and empowering messages that are in there. I've really been enjoying reading it, and I apologize for neglecting to mention your other book, too, that is sitting right here. I just was so caught up in the messages from messages. And you've had some wonderful, wonderful experiences, and I'm very grateful to you for sharing your experiences. A wonderful reminder to indeed listen to our inner voice, especially with that car incident. I won't say accident, incident that you had driving there. Very important to listen to the divine speaking within us. Well, another hour of Toward the Light has gone by. This is quite amazing. It goes so fast when you're having fun, doesn't it? But I do want to remind our listeners that you've been listening to Toward the Light, leading back to this source, and a reminder that it is indeed only with the heart that one can see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. Please do remember that only love prevails, that fear is an illusion and is something to be avoided at all costs. Thank you so much, Gail, for being with us, and we will have you back on again the show soon. It's really wonderful sharing
with
you. My
pleasure. My pleasure.
And I'm sending love and light to everyone. Thank you for joining us this week for Toward the Light. Once again, please visit towardthelight.org. We will talk to you next week. Blessings and light to all of you.